Well, the first half, Brad Williams is sitting in for Bald Brian. He's doing the sound effects and not too shabby. Also, I got a couple of infuriating op-ed bits to share with you as well. I'll give you an update on Jay Leno's health. Chinese expert and author Alex Joski is going to join us and tell us everything you need to know about China. We'll do all that right after this.
Hey, everybody. Ryan Leaf here. We are about to drop 3 bonus episodes for my podcast, Bust, the Ryan Leaf Story, the most honest, transparent, and vulnerable podcast you will hear. Me in front of a microphone taking you through the start to the finish right here on Podcast One.
From Corolla One Studios in Glendale, California, this is the Adam Carolla Show. Adam's guest today, comedian Ari Shaffir and author Alex Joski. With Gina Grad on news and Brad Williams in for Bald Brian on sound effects. And now, still planning his 12-hour walk, which is half the length of one of his rants, Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice. They're going to mandate you. Get it on.
Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for telling a friend. We love that about you, right, Gina Grant?
That's right.
And Brad Williams.
There it is.
That's right. Sitting in for Bald Brian and on the sound effects machine.
I'm scared.
Listen, this job is not that hard.
That's the secret.
Bald, like, complains about it all the time. Oh, I've got to edit drops. I've got to do all this stuff. I mean, listen, you wait for someone to say something fun and then you just hit... It's not that hard, Bald Brian. No wonder someone with a tumor can do this. I have no tumor. I'm doing it twice as good.
He will fucking kill you.
Well, Bald has the flu, and it's severe, so he's going to be out for a couple days. And we got Brad Williams sitting in. So we have a Leno update.
Yes.
Because, I don't know, Brad, you've been to the shop, right?
I have not been to Leno's shop, but I read the headline, and it's scary. And mm-hmm. and the man works on cars all the time. I know he had that one incident a couple years ago where he rolled the car like on his show.
Yeah, and, Jay Leno's garage, yeah. Hemi under glass, funny car.
And which was interesting because if you watch the clip of him rolling the car, he keeps the same face of like, well, here we go, we're just gonna roll right here. Okay, I'll just be fine. Yeah. Like that's he didn't panic, he didn't scream. So no.
He was a passenger.
Yeah.
His first question was, is the driver okay?
Oh, what
yes.
a mensch.
That's who that Jay low resting pulse.
Yeah.
That's
yes.
what he
like
has.
You.
Now comically, I used to say about Jay, it's going to be funny when some kid writes a book report on Jay Leno's life in 2037, and at the end they say he died in a steam car accident,
right.
Because the teacher's going to go, we all have hovercrafts,
yeah.
Johnny.
That's an F.
That's an F for you. The steam cars were phased out 122 years earlier, and... I joked about him dying in a steam car accident, and then we were talking about, like, what happened, and I said, well, I've been there when he's trying to fire up steam cars, and he's underneath the car with a torch and a big plume of fire shoots out, and but then the news was it was a gasoline fire.
Right.
But the gasoline fire was, as I pointed out, but I didn't know it at the time, they got to use something to burn to boil the water to create the steam.
Interesting.
So I think he was working on his 1903 white.
Well, that I don't have, but I do have some information about
it's
how
in
it happened.
Story somewhere. Dawson may have
a TMZ
it.
Story here.
See?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, you were right. 1907 white steam
07,
car.
White, right.
Mm-hmm. Which had a clogged fuel line. He said there was a fuel leak and gas sprayed on his face and hands. A spark triggered an explosion, which then set the Jay Leno's garage host on fire.
Yeah, so he was working on a steam car.
Now, do you know who Dave is? Because it went on to say that seconds later... Yeah, thank you.
That's good.
Fuck.
Brian, we don't need you. You have been replaced.
His friend Dave was with him in the garage, immediately jumped on him to smother the fire. Otherwise, he might have died.
There are a cast of usuals that are around there. Bernard, Dave, guys like that. They're fixtures in the garage. Yeah. If you ever go over there, there's four or five of them. Oftentimes working on their own projects, and sometimes Jay, and usually has a guy working with him on something, and that was Dave at that point.
And just hopped to it, jumped into action.
Yes, so good for Dave.
Man, and this is why I'm going to tell my wife. This is why I refuse to learn how to work on cars.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is why I will
take two words, Jay Leno.
Yeah, Jay Leno. That is why I refuse to do anything.
We have a couple of vids from back in the day, and I knew this one kind of existed with him.
Oh, this is the Chitty Chitty Bang Bang.
They're all Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, but here we go.
Yeah, so this is what Adam originally thought happened to him, because in this clip, Leno will talk about what's happening as he tries to start the steam car, and then he flashes back to an incident in 2007.
Well, now, when you run low on water, what happens is the fire will scorch the tube. The copper tube will begin to melt, and the seal will be gone like a fusible plug, and you lose pressure. And so consequently, they don't blow up. Although they will occasionally backfire on you. Well, like this one did to me. Take a look.
There you go. There.
So big,
there you go.
Big fire plume.
Yeah. A giant fire plume, and his first reaction is, well, there you go.
That was... I thought he was narrating over that,
me
saying,
too.
Well, there you go.
Nope.
And it's like, oh, no, that was his response when a fireball comes at his face. It'd be like,
there you go.
Yeah. And so a lot of his stuff is steam. I rode with him in that white steamer through Burbank, through the Burbank airport.
What?
We tooled along San Fernando from his shop. We made a right. He lives right by the airport. He lives by the side of the airport. And we literally just drove down the Burbank airport lane.
Wow.
And where everyone drops off and picks up and everything.
He's the fucking mayor, man.
And we just did a parade lap right through that. And the steam cars, when they're working, they worked back then.
Top speed?
I don't know, but lots of torque, like lots of get up and go. And he has an electric car from like 1903 over there, too.
Ahead of the curve.
Yeah, this sort of alternative fuel stuff. It's been around for a while. Yeah, what year, you can figure it out, Chris, was his – he has an electric car. It's not 1915 or 22. It's like 1903 or 7
now
or
that
something.
Really
1909.
Fail.
The Baker Electric, 1909.
1909, wow. We had electric cars. Now, same infrastructure in California from 1909. So I don't know if we could charge it back then, but there weren't so many people driving the Baker Electrics back then.
Now, Adam, are you going to go bring him Chick-fil-A in the hospital?
That's a good idea.
I think you should do that.
I should. I, you know, it's always weird when people are, you have throngs of people reaching out. Sure. So then do you want to just be one of those, or do you want to go on record as reaching out?
I'll tell you this. When my dad passed away and everybody reached out, like Brad Williams and so many, thank you. I remember the ones who didn't.
Oh.
So you might want to say, Jay, hope you're okay.
Yeah. All right. I will. I'll do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somebody brought this to my attention just today in the L.A. Times. There's an op-ed piece. I've realized that L.A. Times must sit around and just go, what does Adam not want? Who does he not want for mayor? Will endorse that person. What policy doesn't he want enacted? We will push that policy. It's like, if I like the Rams, they're throwing their weight behind the Chargers. There's just nothing that comes out of the LA Times. It's all the exact opposite of everything that I want. And we had an op-ed today, which was what, Dawson?
It's dangerous out there on the mean streets of, well, just about any city where cars and pedestrians interact. The headline is turning right on a red light your California birthright?
Yes.
Absolutely not.
It's all we have. It's all we have.
Over the last decade, all U.S. traffic deaths have increased by 13%.
Right. Well, who's the bitch who wrote this op-ed? What's her name?
Robin Abkarian.
Robin, we also have throngs of homeless people beaked out of their brains staggering into the intersection and stepping off the curb. So if we focus...
Our population goes up. It's only natural.
Watch out for pedestrians on the freeway.
Right. Who are the pedestrians in Los Angeles? It is homeless people that are high out of their fucking minds stumbling onto the street. I would argue that's the reason the numbers have gone up. And if you'd focus on that problem, then it would help with your problem. But you, well, you're like a good bureaucrat, someone who cheers on bureaucrats. You just want more rules. All right. What's Robin go on to say?
In an attempt to reverse the deadly trend, cities are seeking ways to intervene. One promising change that's catching on, prohibiting drivers from turning right on red lights. Last week, Berkeley joined the effort to reduce the risk of cars crashing into pedestrians and cyclists by, to one degree or another, outlawing rights on reds. Policies like eliminating right on red are smart and easy ways to begin the process of deprioritizing car use in Berkeley.
That's where we're heading. Get on your feet and walk it out, bitches.
And placing lives above driver convenience. So far, the data are promising.
Yeah, it's not driver convenience. It's essentially gridlock. We've done nothing to
alleviate traffic, like you say. We're trying to live in a high-functioning society. We're trying to make sure, as you say all the time, what's the one problem, no matter who you are in this state, that you encounter? Traffic.
Traffic.
So anything and everything should be done, in my opinion, to alleviate traffic. And it's not, well, in spite of a few lives. It's like, well, we could all save all lives by just staying home and with our heads in the sand and our thumbs in our asses.
Zero, yes.
No deaths from car accidents then.
Robin Abkarian also was like, ugh, this person doesn't know how to think. And then it reminded Chris, she had another op-ed. Another poignant op-ed from, I don't know, a year and a half ago?
Yeah, 2 February.
Years ago.
Moving February, sidewalks, the world's most inconvenient killer.
The title is My Sixth Grader May Never Give Up Her Mask. If only adults could be this grown up.
Yeah, about the shit that doesn't work, sweetheart. About that. What else? I'm on pins and needles, Robin. What other hot takes do you have that you're 100% wrong about? Masks don't do shit. They never did shit. And even if they did do shit, if you don't have to wear them, if half the people that are lecturing you about wearing masks are wearing them down underneath their nose or taking pictures with Magic Johnson at SoFi Stadium, then they don't work, Robin. But I know you love rules, and I know you have a sixth grader that's smarter, or a six-year-old that's smarter than we all are. But how about an apology, Robin? Keep reading, Chris. I want to know about these masks. What year is this from?
This is February of this year.
Oh, God. It's weird how people are able to take their crazy, gypsy, superstitious bullshit and drag it into the modern era.
Does her sixth grader hang out with Amy Adams' kid? Because remember, Amy Adams thanked her kid during a Oscar speech and was like, my kid has
taught me how to love. Yes.
Listen, I have a 2.5-year-old. Hasn't taught me shit.
No.
Yeah.
Hasn't taught me anything.
They don't know much.
I haven't learned how to embrace love and reject fear, and I haven't learned any new tricks about masking or vaccinations. Nothing.
No.
I've learned nothing
from
my daughter.
Nothing.
She's not pulling her weight. That's all
really?
I'm saying.
They're
she's
cute little potatoes.
Yeah.
They don't do anything.
All right. Sorry, Chris.
All right. This is how the mask mandate is going in our house. On Monday, the sixth grader, who wore a surgical mask all day at school, including when she ran a mile in PE,
healthy,
came home and plopped onto the couch to start her Mandarin homework.
Mm-hmm.
You can take off your mask now, I said. I don't want to, she said.
Oh, great. She's scarred mentally. Awesome.
I don't want to, she said. It's so comfortable.
What? That's never been uttered by a child.
No.
This is not unusual.
Oh, I like my Merkin. Yeah, but you've left the whorehouse. Yeah, I know, but I like to just wear it around the castle.
It's literally warm and fuzzy.
Gina.
Yeah.
When you would come home after a long day, this is back when the back with the old boobs.
Yeah.
Would you ever just keep your bra on, just walking around the house because it was so comfortable?
There's nothing cozier than a double underwire poking into your sides.
So
No, this kid has a point.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry.
I don't want to, she said. It's so comfortable. This is not unusual. My 11-year-old niece is better at following public health directives than most adults I know.
Yeah, ones that make sense, bitch. These don't make sense. You understand? I could put a fucking maypole in my backyard and walk around it six times to prevent COVID, but it wouldn't do anything, and you would make fun of me. It's comfortable. I like wearing a mask. It's uncomfortable. It's bad for kids. It's bad for their facial recognition and all the things they need for growth. And you've damaged kids. Crazy gypsy hysterics.
Well, and like you say about crate training, she's saying it's comfortable like it's comfortable to wear. It's comfortable for an 11-year-old to follow the rules when they're scared to do otherwise.
Here's my point, Robin. You had a hot take on masks. 8.5 months ago, you were wrong. So should we listen to your hot take on right turns? And then what other hot takes do you have chambered for us?
Oh,
boy. We hang on every one of your semi-retarded words, Robin.
Well, Gary just sent me this, and I want to read it to you. This is U.S. News from today.
I can't find the "Hi, Gary" drop. Come on.
Keep hitting them until you find one.
Say something that involves the number three.
for the third time today.
Three times, fool.
There you go. The public health director of Los Angeles County is set to recommend mask wearing for L.A. County residents and visitors after an increase in COVID-19. This from today.
I have a recommendation for
Barbara Ferrer.
How about you blow us?
No, that'd take a while.
How about that?
Long line.
You fucking coward sheep pussies, if you don that mask again, I will look down my nose, my maskless nose, at your soft, willowy asses. Fuck you guys.
Well, and that's the thing. You've said it, and it really resonated with me, and this is when we were in the thick of it. When somebody who gets COVID says, I don't know how this could have happened. I'm vaccinated. I stay home. I wear my mask. I did everything right.
Because you can't control it, atheist, crazy, gypsy person. You cannot control it. Now relinquish. Give it. Just step back. You can do things like vitamin D, sunshine, exercise, lose weight, stop smoking, blah, blah. The things you can do to mitigate things, but you cannot control it. This is the new sort of atheist Orwellian world we're living in, which is they stop believing in Jesus Christ, but they didn't stop believing in something. And that is
bigger
this.
Than ourselves.
That is this. You're wrong. You're just wrong. Now apologize and get the fuck on with your lives, Barbara Ferrer, who should never have been in this position ever. She's a sociologist.
Guidance
we
counselor.
Put her in charge of Los Angeles. Why wasn't there a committee?
Or at least have a couple MDs.
A couple of MDs in there. Yeah, I mean, Robin and her friends over the Times wouldn't have tolerated Dr. Drew weighing in on any of this stuff because they just like sociologists.
And this is another one of those things where – and I've said this a lot for both politicians on the left and the right and commentators. Every now and then, if you give yourself an L, it actually makes you look better.
Yeah.
That's why I say when you fake the orgasm, ladies, hold one back. Hold a fake one back.
Yeah.
Like 2 out of every 10.
Yeah.
Sure.
And then now I'm all in. If I have a string of unbroken orgasms that goes into the thousands, I'm going to get curious.
Then you're, yeah.
It's suspicious.
Yeah. It's suspicious.
Every now and then just be like, no, not tonight, honey. And then, by the way, the next night, I am coming strong to the hoop.
That's right.
I'm going to put all the effort into it because this is not happening again.
Brad doesn't use a lot of basketball metaphors, but when he does, you should listen. No, it is. It's interesting. I mean, I'm dubbing my own thought interesting, but if you would like to cement a belief like, man, this person is not lying or they're accurate, hold back 2 orgasms out of 10. If you're faking all 10 in a row and you never stop, hold one back every once in a while and then we shall listen.
Yeah.
We shall believe. And Barbara Ferrer and whoever these nut jobs at the Times need to go every once in a while, you know, I was wrong about the mask thing. Turns out, we're such nuts that we go, well, there's a spike, so we're going to implement the shit that doesn't work.
we're going to get the distancing back in. We're going to keep wiping down those countertops. We're going to do the fist bump, maybe gloves and masks. So you nutty, suspicious, crazy people are going to implement something that doesn't work to try to mitigate something that is happening. It's insane.
It's very fool me once, because aside from you.
Aside from me.
And that has to be distinguished. Aside from you, everyone's like, you know what? We didn't know. We thought we threw everything at this thing. We thought we're working on a vaccination. We say stay apart, wear a mask. We didn't know.
You're spraying down our mailboxes. That's
we were leaving our groceries outside for 2 days. Nobody knew. But now to double back. But to double back on it and start over, now you look like a fucking idiot.
Yes. So I don't know. Let's not listen to Barbara Ferrer about anything ever again. And I don't know. A Los Angeles Times, keep writing op-eds. And you know what? I'm going to clean up and expedite the whole editorial staff over there at the Los Angeles Times. I will come in on a Saturday and I will explain everything that I'm looking for out of Los Angeles. And then you guys can just do the polar opposite and you will be loaded for your next 25 op-eds.
Sure. I mean,
you're doing a good job so
far. She's already got one in the chamber. Blowjobs, why men hate them.
Oh, there's another mask article.
Oh, no, it's the same one. It just goes on.
What's she want to do? Are you talking about Barbara Ferrer?
No, Robin.
Oh, what's Robin want? Yeah, tell me more.
Another situation she wanted to write about. About 10 months ago when we picked up our new puppy in Carlsbad,
was wearing a mask?
a far more politically conservative area than Venice, the maskless man of the house looked at my niece and said, "Can I ask you a question? Why are you wearing that mask?" "I like to," she replied. "It makes me feel safe."
Oh, boy.
What could he say? "Take it off? I don't want you to feel safe?" He just shrugged. I think about this.
Well, let me say this. Feeling safe, if whatever you're feeling safe about, whatever you're engaged in, doesn't statistically make you any safer, is put you in more danger.
How?
It's like saying, I have these protocols where I go, it's like saying if I said to my son, put this doily, put this coaster on your head.
It's called a yarmulke.
Instead of a bike helmet, but put this coaster on your head and it'll protect you if you get into a bike accident. That person may engage in more dangerous riding behaviors, feeling a false safety of something that does not protect them.
It's NFL football helmets.
Yes.
We've said, hey, you have a helmet. And now the guys started diving headfirst into each other.
And getting concussed.
Exactly.
Right. Sorry, Chris.
I think about this when I see posts on social media that are variations on the same whiny theme, because this came out during a Super Bowl.
Whiny.
Few football fans appear to be wearing masks at the Super Bowl on Sunday. Clips of various unmasked celebrities are making the rounds, but children all over Los Angeles will be forced to wear masks when they return to school on Monday. How unconscionable.
That's right. So drop the mandate.
Oh,
fucking
please.
Idiots.
She says, oh, please. Kids have adapted. It's the grown-ups who stomp their feet and act like petulant tykes.
Because we won't engage in a behavior that doesn't make sense. And quite frankly, if you're a mouth breather like me, pretty annoying. Like,
literally.
It's pretty hot. Yeah. My glasses fog up. It's not doing anything. Yeah. There was a constant anxiety of, like, first off, I got into a huge argument with my daughter. We didn't talk for a week because she wanted me to pull my mask up at outdoors at a parking lot, like at a restaurant. Like, it causes a lot of friction and anxiety. Sure. People have been yelled at on commercial airline flights. Mike August has been yelled at on commercial airline flights, like, countless dozens of times about this mask arrayed of safety.
Oh, boy.
If that's not your book about the year 2020, it needs to be.
Yeah. So the problem are people like these op-ed authors. It's not the same people who like to get the fuck on with our lives. Blah.
And if you want to keep wearing masks, totally fine.
Yeah, go ahead.
It doesn't affect anyone else. I don't see anyone with a mask and say anything to them. I don't stop them. I know, because I'm in the airports all the time. I still see a lot of people wearing masks. Fine. Yep. Wear your masks.
I always harken back to what you said about the Asian culture, that before all of our mask stuff, they were way out ahead. And when you found out they were wearing masks to protect other people, you were totally on board and loved them.
Yes.
So feel free to be that guy and feel free to do what you want. But yeah, please stop with the nonsense. We get it. We did it already. We learned.
Or how about this, Robin, in Los Angeles Times? Cite the info. Then you go find the studies. Go find me the studies that say masks are effective. Go find the studies.
Not readily available.
Yeah, because they don't exist. So go find that and then print that, and then maybe you can win over some converts instead of ruining your kids. Ugh. My kid, but you're right. My kids don't know anything. I haven't learned anything. Well, let's see. What have I learned? I've learned that my son hates soccer, and that's really my only achievement as a dad.
Good. Well, there you
go. That's all I got.
That's proof you're a good parent.
Yes. All right. Let's see. Let me hit a spot here. Good Ranchers. Yeah. Holidays. Well, the waists get bigger and the wallets get smaller. Good Ranchers wants you to save in a season of spending. Beef prices are estimated to increase another 20% in 2023. Good Ranchers is letting you lock in your price this November when you subscribe during Black Friday savings. With my code Adam, you get their exclusive Black Friday offer for two free 12-ounce Black Angus New York strip steaks. Inflation-proof your meat budget. Get $70 of free USDA choice steaks and save an additional $25 on every box when you subscribe. Good protein for the year. It's Good Ranchers, right, Dawson?
Treat yourself or someone you love to Good Ranchers award-winning service and quality this holiday season. Remember to visit goodranchers.com/Adam or use code Adam at checkout to grab their best offer of the year. Black Angus is one of the premier breeds of cattle for high-quality beef, so don't have a normal Black Friday this year. Have a Black Angus Friday with two free steaks from Good Ranchers, American meat delivered.
All right. Let me get some clips for Brad, by the way. Brea Improv coming up Friday through Sunday. Brad always knocks it out of the ballpark over there. Also, Kansas City at the Improv Comedy Club coming up December 2nd and 3rd. And I got a front row seat to Brad's stand-up a few weeks ago, and he just crushed it, man.
Thank you, sir. And it was great to be out there with on your night with all your friends. And literally that one friend that was your childhood friend that was in the front row that every single comic made fun of.
Chris, yeah.
that was awesome.
Yeah, it was a good night. We got another night coming up at the Improv Melrose tonight, I guess, hear this. Dane Cook's going to be there. I think Jeff Ross is going to be there. Let's see, who the hell else is going to be there? We'll
figure it out. Any other up-and-comers?
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So we have Alex Josky. Alex is an author who knows everything about China. And China's we're in a weird place with China because they're going to eat all our lunch and drink all our milkshakes and they're going to kick all our asses. And that's the plan. But we don't really know how to handle them. And for instance, Biden just met with China. I would have some questions about. Here's the interesting part about this whole thing, and I'll get into it with Alex. This virus destroyed economies and destroyed lives and was a worldwide pandemic. Mm-hmm. And it came from the Wuhan area of China. Somebody suggested maybe it came from the lab that's experimenting with drugs or experimenting with viruses that seem very close to this one up the road. And if you were that person, you were pilloried and pulled off of Twitter and destroyed by the New York Times.
Yeah.
That's an interesting time we're living in. We have an arch enemy who unleashed, either willing or not, a virus on the world and destroyed the world. And if you were a senator or you had a podcast and you raised your hand and went, maybe it came from the lab of virology up the thing, the entire nation turned against you.
And I still don't understand it. I remember reporting it as, oh, it came from a lab. Oh, now they're saying it came from a wet market. Like, it makes no difference to me. Which is it?
It was all Trump derangement syndrome, because Trump said he's calling it the Chinese virus and it came from the lab. And once Trump said it, then if you said it, it didn't matter if it was true or not, then you would get attacked because it was Trump derangement syndrome. Now, I don't know why news outlets are unable to discern. Mm-hmm. Or say,
just pick one.
We don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's okay to say as well. And it eventually got to the point where even Jon Stewart, I think it was
Colbert Report. It was.
Right.
Or, not Colbert Report, but Late Show with Stephen Colbert, where he was finally like, yeah, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. You mean the clinic that says the Wuhan COVID virus clinic?
Yeah. It didn't come from there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I said too, if this thing came from Houston, Texas. Mm-hmm. I mean, if we had a virology lab and the thing came from Houston, Texas, and somebody said, you know, the Los Angeles Times said it definitely came from an armadillo, and you raised your hand and went, the U.S. government's military is doing a lab that's working on the same viruses up the road from where the armadillo was, mm-hmm. would you have been pilloried?
I don't know why.
It would have been like, yeah, well, that's definitely on the table of places that this virus could have escaped from.
And by the way, please stop calling it the Houston flu.
That's right. All right. We
Cruise
are
flu.
Officially yeah. nuts, but we'll speak to Alex Joski and see what he thinks right after this.
Do you own? Do you rent your home? Sure you do. And it can be hard work. You know what's easy? Bundling your policies with Geico. Geico makes it easy to bundle your homeowner's or renter's insurance along with your auto policy. It's a good thing, too, because you have so much to do already around your home. Why not make it easy? Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could save. It's Geico easy. Visit geico.com today. That's geico.com.
Hey, Corolla Drinks fans. We've got a special anniversary coming up. November marks the 10-year anniversary of Mangria. To celebrate this milestone and, more importantly, the support that the fans have given us, we're excited to announce each and every bottle of Mangria and 33 wines during the month of November is $10 only. That's right. Head to CorollaDrinks.com and get your bottles for only $10. The holidays are coming. Thank you so much for supporting us over the past decade. It really means the world to us. We love you guys. Happy holidays from all of us at Corolla Drinks.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Did my 12-hour walk, and I recommend walking as far as you can for at least 6 hours, because that makes it easier for you not to quit, because if you're around your house, it's easier to get back. By far, the hardest part was not having any entertainment. The walking part was the easy part. Glad I did it. Thanks a lot. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Alex Joski, author, analyst, Spies and Lies, How China's Greatest Covert Operations Fooled the World, is coming to us from Australia, Alex.
Hi, good to be here.
All right. Glad to have you. So I guess China's kind of on everyone's mind because Biden just met with China. But give us a kind of overview of China and what they're trying to accomplish.
It's really something that's hard to escape right now. And I think it's really because we're at this point where China is building its power and it's stopped really hiding its ambitions to become a superpower around the world, to throw its weight, to have its way in international affairs. And in so many ways, I think that clashes against the things that we care about. You know, in Australia, in the United States, about human rights, about democracy, about freedoms. So managing that rise is really probably one of the hardest problems of the century.
Is this right that we get kind of caught up in Russia and Putin, Ukraine, you know, or even Middle Eastern terrorists, Al-Qaeda? It's kind of like shark attacks. It's like it's so visceral. Look at that 22-foot great white shark. It bit that surfboard in half, you know. But we'd be kind of fools to focus on that. Statistically, this is a larger danger to us. But China sort of keeps a low profile and looks sort of docile compared to these other evil despot rulers. But do they pose a greater danger? Does anyone pose a greater danger to the U.S. or the Western world than China?
I don't think so. I think it's, you know, it's only becoming more of a problem. China is still growing economically. It's already far larger than Russia, but I think we've kind of been like, you know, frogs in a pot of boiling water that's slowly heating up, and it's only when it's sort of too late, or, you know, in this case, I think decades late, that we've really realized the kind of problem that we're facing, the trouble that we're in with China, that we've been welcoming it into the world, giving it more power, giving it more responsibility, and now we're seeing, you know, it's carrying out insane human rights abuses. It's interfering in political systems around the world. It's breaching human rights and so on.
And Alex, this is professional idiot Brad Williams. Just curious, what got you into this sort of area? What sparked your interest in China?
Yeah, so I'm half Chinese. I lived in China for about 6 years, but you know, I'm an Australian citizen. So I've always had a connection to China. I have a lot of family there, and I've always spoken some Chinese. And then when I was at university, I got fired from my job as a waiter. And I was terrible at that sort of stuff. I didn't drink coffee at the time, so I could never remember any of the coffee orders and the different things people were asking for. And I needed to kind of pretend that I had a job. So I ended up working as a reporter at the university's student newspaper. And through that, I started looking at what China was doing at my university in Australia. And I found that we had this Chinese government-backed student association that would basically take directions from the Chinese embassy and go, you know, pull newspapers off racks because they weren't supporting the Chinese Communist Party. They would go report on other students for, you know, getting involved in protests and being pro-democracy. And really, this organization, the leaders of it, were acting as proxies for the Chinese government at my university. And that's really what got me started on this side of China.
How much of this, at least in America, is due to us being useful idiots? Like, take the whole COVID. We were speaking before we spoke to you about the lab and where the lab leak and where the virus emanated from, and anyone who brought up labs or leaks more than 10 minutes ago was destroyed in this country. And I kept thinking, well, okay, one, it's just an opinion. Two, it seems like it makes sense. Three, this is a person that is patriotic. We are saying we think there's something nefarious going on and that people were harmed and that people need to be held accountable. Why is every major newspaper and big tech turning on the senator or the podcaster who's floating this notion?
Yeah, it was really pretty incredible to me, you know, the way people treated the lab leak theory with coronavirus. Like, you know, I of course don't know what actually happened, but I think it's a pretty reasonable explanation for where this virus came from. And, you know, I won't go over it again, but I think so much of this is just down to hubris. This fact that the US is used to being the world leader, used to being a superpower, and still, I think, has that belief essentially that the world is moving towards democratization, that this is kind of a natural, inevitable process, and that China was going through this process. But what was actually happening is, you know, China decided very early on, I think, that the US was really its main threat, well before the US realized that China was a threat. So that means it's had decades to build its policies, build the international environment, prepare for a period when the US started realizing what was actually going on. And that's what we're seeing right now.
Gina.
It seems, just from where I sit, that we are so dependent on China when it comes to manufacturing that it always – everything, even like recycling, like that's above my pay grade. Like what about the factories that are making the plastic bottles? Don't look at me. I'm – you know, look at them. And I'm wondering, because we are so dependent when it comes to manufacturing, why don't the big guys do something about that if they're so worried? I guess the answer is they're not worried.
Yeah, I mean, one of the kind of really frustrating parts of working on China, in my opinion, is that more and more there is a kind of consensus that people in Washington, D.C., people in Canberra, Australia, kind of get now that we got China wrong or that China has changed and we need to change our China policy in response to that. And, you know, we can't rely on China for these key parts of our supply chain and our economy if it's got the ability to just turn off that tap, you know, like pipettes, for example, which are fundamental to all sort of medical testing. We're totally relying on China, I've heard. And
microchips. You know,
yeah, exactly. I mean, microchips is a really nice area where we've still got a bit of an advantage, but China is trying to pull that back. Mm. And so there's that consensus happening, but I think it really breaks down when it comes to what we actually do about it, because that's the point where you have to say, you know, sorry, this American company or this constituency is actually going to take a hit for, you know, us going after China on this matter. And so it really breaks down at that sort of political level. It breaks down when you're pitting economic and security interests against each other. So
it's just so short-sighted. Like we talk about, what is it, the 300-year plan from China?
I think it's 100-year.
Oh, is it 100-year? Well, that's the thing. It's like talk about being able to see the long game. We're so short-sighted that we can't give up, you know, because we're getting this cheap right now.
Yeah, and they must be delighted that we are forcing, or at least attempting to force, everyone to go all electric vehicles, for instance. But they're the ones who have the mines that have the materials for the batteries that we are going to need to go full electric, and that we won't let ourselves open those mines here to support those electric vehicles. There's a part of them that have to just be sitting back and laughing at us all day.
I think one of the most incredible sorts of, you know, dilemmas here is just around solar panels and human rights, where actually a lot of the supply chains and the minerals that you need to build a solar cell come from Xinjiang, which is the same region in Western China where you've got, you know, estimated over 1 million ethnic Turkic, you know, often Muslim individuals in concentration camps. And a lot of those people are being put into forced labor to, you know, to grow tomatoes, to produce garments, and to also produce the materials needed for solar cells. So there's actually this incredible trade-off here where, on the one hand, you know, we want more solar panels for renewable energy to control climate change, to diversify our energy sources. But trying to do that means working with China and being complicit in some of these human rights abuses.
Well, some of the people on the farther right extremes are, well, floating the theory that the Bidens may be compromised by China and Hunter and Joe and the whole family essentially trying to do a lot of business in China, and that China may have something on the Biden family. It seems far-fetched, but many things seem further-fetched like 4 years ago that have all kind of come to fruition. So everything for me is on the table right now in terms of conspiracy theories. And Biden doesn't seem to be going after China on these human rights issues or on COVID origins and then something like fentanyl. Fentanyl is, yeah, I think the number one cause of accidental death is fentanyl or drug ODs in this country. I'll screw it up, but the number one cause of death of Americans like 18 to 34 is just drugs at this point.
It's not good no matter what the actual stat.
Whatever,
is.
If I screw it up by a couple of years, it all falls under the bad category. China is opening up the fentanyl labs and bringing the materials or whatever into Mexico. The border's a porous mess. The shit is pouring through the border, and now it's all over the streets of the United States. That would seem like something to talk to China about. Like, hey, what's with the fentanyl? What's up?
What are you, Seinfeld?
What's going on with the fentanyl already? That isn't coming up. We're trying to convince them to go green. That's Biden's big push. They're not going green. They're just going to laugh us. They're opening another coal mine in the time that Biden was asking them to go green. But they have to be laughing their ass off at us, asking them to go green when they're cooking the fentanyl and have the, you know, million people enslaved. I mean, we must seem nuts and super weak to them.
That's exactly my point. It's specifically that example of manufacturing. They're like, where are you going to go? They're like, Newsom, where are you going to go? You can't go anywhere, so fuck you.
So conspiracy theories with China and Hunter and Joe and business.
Yeah, I think there's something to it in the sense that there's good evidence that Hunter Biden had relationships with and was being targeted by people who are known to have connections to Chinese military intelligence specifically. But I think it's harder to say exactly how that's influencing Biden, but it's definitely something that's there. And I mean, in Australia, we had a former prime minister enter a business relationship with proxies for Chinese spies, essentially. So this is totally in keeping with what Chinese intelligence agencies do. They try to identify political elites. They look at their family members. They build relationships with them and hope that's basically something they can use to leverage, to compromise them. You know, in the case of Hunter Biden, he was working with a Chinese billionaire who's now disappeared called Ye Jianming. And this guy, Ye Jianming, earlier in his career, worked in Chinese military intelligence. One of his sort of top U.S. representatives was actually convicted in New York of a whole range of bribery charges, bribing people in the United Nations, bribing people in African countries. And these are the exact same people who Hunter Biden was engaging with, and their connections to the Chinese government were actually known to Hunter Biden. You know, he was referring to this guy as China's spy master. So clearly there's something going on there.
Well, maybe we'll see a whole expose in the LA Times about that relationship. Not.
Timely,
that one back.
Timely joke.
Yes, they would never dare do an op-ed on that. We just have to be told to wear masks and rot at red lights. So let's take something like fentanyl. I think most Americans are like, if this thing is kind of the labs are being set up by the Chinese and the Mexicans are cooking it and muling it over here, shouldn't we talk to China about fentanyl? Why and why not? Like, why? Who? I don't know who we would speak to, but
the fentanyls are.
China's pretty good at shutting stuff down they don't like. Is what I'm saying. Like, if China doesn't want you doing something, you will stop doing it. They're not stopping fentanyl. Now, of course, they would like us all poisoning ourselves over here. That'll just help weaken us and arguing over where COVID emanated from. But what about fentanyl? Any thoughts?
Well, here's one of the really insane things about China, which is there's an actual quote from the head of China's police force back in the 1990s, where he says, organized crime can be patriotic. So basically their policy towards mafias, triads, is not they're necessarily bad because they're criminals. It's they're bad if they're not working in alignment with our objectives. So you can actually see a lot of evidence, especially in the casino industry with organized crime in places like Canada, it's really been documented that these groups are actually working with the Chinese government and have some sort of backing from the Chinese government. It's got a stake in their activities. And exactly to your point, the Chinese government can crack down on this. They're choosing not to. Exactly why, you know, I'm not exactly sure, but it's something that they could be doing and we need to make a louder fuss about it.
They would never – there's no fentanyl problem in China, right?
I really don't think there is.
They would never –
there wouldn't be. Why would they give it to their own people?
They wouldn't tolerate it is what I'm saying. But they can get it into Mexico.
And you talked about Canada. That made me think about – and I could be wrong. And I think the last thing any of us are trying to do is vilify an entire culture of people. That's not the point. That's not what we're doing. But – with all the developing in Vancouver and like how sky high rents and sky high prices for everything that, of course, we're experiencing here like crazy, I believe they put into policy like no more foreign investors right now. Like we got to put that on ice. And from what I understand, most of that is coming from China. Is that like what's the word? Is that just a way to hide funds or what? Why are we developing in other countries? What are we doing?
Launder.
Yeah, right. Thank you.
I mean, that's not all of it, but it's a pretty big part of it. You know, you can actually kind of track when there are corruption scandals in China, when there are purges of the political system in China, people end up overseas.
You know, real estate.
They will park a kid or a wife or a mistress in Australia, New York, in Canada as a kind of safety
Wow.
They're buying farmland here, too.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That was all urban area development.
They're buying, like, farmland, and some of it is next to sensitive areas. And they know what they're doing. Like, it's theirs isn't the battering ram. Theirs is ivy.
Right.
That's how they just grow. And they just, and no one ever walks outside and goes, is that ivy further than it was yesterday?
Yeah,
it
no
just,
way to know.
It just is. But then you go out of town for 5 years and come back and it's engulfed the building.
Right.
And that's their, you know, they're buying farmland out here. I don't know why we're selling it to them or what their rationale is for the farmland out here. They also have belts and roads, which is all through Africa and many other nations.
They're also marrying our dwarf comedian.
That's
true. Your wife.
Insidious is what it is.
The calls are coming from inside the house.
Yeah, so why farmland in the United States and then belts and roads? Explain that policy.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the really tricky things with China that, you know, there's a lot of genuine private activity, but so much of that is wrapped up with national objectives, with what the state is trying to get. And that means that it's really hard to say that something in China is purely being pursued for commercial interests. And even if it is, you know, even if a company is just buying up farmland because it thinks it's a good investment, the Chinese government has laws in place that will basically allow it to tap that company and say, hey, now we want to use this farmland and install a secret listening post on it to steal data from nearby or listen to phone calls in the area, that sort of thing. You know, there's an actual national intelligence law in China that says that you as a Chinese citizen or a Chinese company are required to cooperate when asked in intelligence and national security operations. And if you tell anyone that you're cooperating with us, you've broken this law.
So what are they doing in Africa and other sort of developing nations?
Yeah, China's heavily invested in Africa. You know, it's trying to build supply chains there. It's trying to build, you know, iron mining in Guinea so it doesn't have to rely on iron ore from Australia. And I think China's really pushing as far as it can, wherever it can. So it's hard to find a country that's sort of too small to be of interest to China. You have all these different Chinese government companies building advanced, you know, tech in some countries, building infrastructure. One of the really remarkable things I think about China and Africa is that China's really pioneering surveillance equipment and all these systems to basically track what everyone is doing in your city if you've got that kind of technology.
Oh, good.
And it's something that, like, the U.S. isn't really happy exporting to an African dictatorship, but that's something China doesn't have any sort of problem with. So you see China actually offering a lot of things to these countries that, you know, Western democratic countries wouldn't really feel comfortable doing. And so you've got China building surveillance systems, supplying technology for that kind of stuff to countries like Zimbabwe.
They give them so much money, they can't say no. And then they don't say anything when they're up to their nefarious activities. But you could also say that about China's relationship with the NBA. They essentially just go, hey, LeBron, shut up. Because we got money. And that's the insidious part of this whole thing. I hear TikTok brought up.
I have that in the news.
Every once in a while. And the folks, the same nut jobs who thought masks didn't work and thought the virus may have came from the lab, have been talking about TikTok for 3 years.
Yeah.
But I've never really known what to make of it other than it's a Chinese company and they say they're gathering data. But you could speak to that, Alex, I hope.
Yeah, well, I think the facts are basically, you know, TikTok is owned by this Chinese tech company. It's pretty much admitted that TikTok data is available in China. There's pretty good evidence that at least in some cases, posts on TikTok have been censored, you know, in favor of Chinese government political lines. And then I think one of the really interesting things about TikTok as an app is that it's not really social media. What I mean by that is that you're not actually really interacting with other people. You're just getting this feed of content that has been selected specifically for you. You're not talking to your friends or anything like that. So it's really just a full stream of content designed to trigger your interests and to get you more interested in the platform. And that really makes it, I think, quite effective if it were to be used for some kinds of influence work. You know, it's way better for that than something like Facebook.
God, we're so stupid. I'm wondering, you said you lived in China for 6 years and you do this and you're pretty outspoken and we know your name. Are you worried about being on anyone's radar?
Yeah.
Does that concern you?
While I was writing this book, I got 3 separate warnings from Google itself saying that foreign government hackers were trying to access my password. And this is something they don't kind of send out randomly. It's pretty uncommon, but a lot of people in the field get this kind of pressure. So basically hacking, I was officially banned from China back in 2020. So I haven't been back in quite a while.
That's something you could add to your list about something you want to do.
A rogue nation banning you.
Yeah.
Because you're a beacon of truth.
It's quite a feather in your cap.
Well, I think there are a lot of ways to get on Russian sanction lists right now. They're pretty trigger happy with that.
Yeah, where is China vis-a-vis Russia? Because while we're saying we're not doing it, we don't want to do any more business with Russia. We don't want any more of their oil, their energy. China, who's down for power and money with anyone at any time, they're now doing a lot more business with Russia, correct?
Yeah, I think China's trying to play this funny game of acting like it's sort of neutral and just a bystander to this conflict. But as an economy, you know, one of the world's largest economies with 1 billion people supplying all sorts of goods to Russia, you can't actually be neutral in this. You're not actually sitting it out. And Xi Jinping, you know, the Chinese leader, talks about his bromance with Putin. He talks about a no-limits partnership with Russia. So I think it's pretty clear who they're aligned with here.
Is Xi Jinping going to be around for another 25 years? Is there a system where somebody else would take his place? And then what are the chances that whoever took his place may change course? We speculate that with Russia. The common wisdom is, well, even if Putin is sick and on his last days, whoever replaces him is just going to go the same direction. And then some people go, maybe worse. Yeah. So what's that like in China?
I think it's pretty much the same with China. You know, I really believe that all the problems we're seeing now are driven by Xi Jinping, but they're not unique to him. And that you can look back at history, look back at the intelligence operations that I've documented in the 90s, in the 2000s. And you can see back then China trying to infiltrate foreign political systems, Chinese spies coming up with this very theory of China's peaceful rise, telling people around the world that China would rise peacefully back in the early 2000s. So they've clearly had a long-term game of pushing this kind of belief and a long-term vision to challenge the United States. And if you look at Chinese history, you know, Mao Zedong, for example, he was leader until his death, even though in the last couple of years of his life, he was basically disabled and incoherent. You know, he had severe illness. He could barely speak. He had to have a special interpreter who could basically interpret his mumbles and was asleep in a lot of meetings with foreign dignitaries. So China's has a history of actually, you know, following through with its leaders to the very end.
Going full weekend at Bernie's. Mm-hmm.
What should the U.S. do? What should our posture be toward China? Right now, it's sort of, I don't know, live and let live, and let's not anger them. But is that correct? Or what would you like if you were the president of the United States? How would you approach China?
I think the recent semiconductor policy basically really pushes back China's semiconductor industry, you know, producing microchips by a couple of years. And that's probably the only really hard-hitting policy that this administration has made on China. But there's also really good stuff happening in terms of law enforcement prosecutions. They're going after these Chinese police and Secret Service agents who are being sent overseas to harass dissidents, to spy on people in the United States. But I really think the game is about Southeast Asia. It's about Korea, Japan, Taiwan, you know, Central Asia. And while, you know, the U.S. is slowly and definitely not fast enough changing policies domestically to control what China's doing, in your country, it's a whole other question about Southeast Asia. You know, if there's a Taiwan conflict, for example, the U.S. is going to have to rely on basing in a lot of these countries. It might have to refuel in places like the Philippines. And with all these covert influence operations, buying up elites in these countries, you could actually lose that access to those countries in a heartbeat when this sort of conflict starts. So U.S. needs to really be going out overseas, building strong partnerships with these countries, keeping China off these countries, and pushing back against those covert operations.
Well, the name of the book is Spies and Lies, How China's Greatest Covert Operations Fooled the World, and it's available wherever you find finer books. Alex Joski, I hope you will check in with us from time to time and give us an update on all things China.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
My pleasure. Alex Joski, everybody. All right, let's see. Ari Shaffir is running a couple minutes late, but we got some tweet splaining to play with Prad.
Oh, good.
Oh, boy.
I will I will first throw it to our friend Jordan Harbinger, a different kind of sponsor for this podcast, the Jordan Harbinger Show. It's, well, if you're a fan of fascinating podcasts with interesting people, you should definitely check it out. There's an episode for everyone, no matter what you're into. Jordan talks with Scott Adams about persuasion in a world where facts don't matter, or go inside the dark world of wildlife trafficking. You'll always find something useful, and you can apply it to your own life, like routine changes to boost productivity, or slight mindset tweaks that change how you see the world. Jordan's an interesting dude. Spoken to him on many occasions. We enjoy his show, and I think you will, too. Search it out. The Jordan Harbinger Show. That's H-A-R-B as in boy, I-N as in Nancy, G-E-R. And you can find Jordan's show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen to finer podcasts. It's the Jordan Harbinger Show. All right. I think what we should do is we'll take a quick break. We'll come back. We'll do some tweet splaining with Brad's tweets. And then Ari Shaffir will join us. And we'll do that right after this.
All month long on Pluto TV, stream the biggest Tyler Perry movies free. Watch your favorites like Madea's Witness Protection and Madea's Big Happy Family. Join Tyler Perry as he goes on a couples retreat with Sharon Leal in Why Did I Get Married? Or Idris Elba and Gabrielle Union in the Tyler Perry-directed film Daddy's Little Girls. Plus, Pluto TV has hundreds of channels with thousands more movies and TV shows available on live and on demand. Download the free Pluto TV app on all your favorite devices and start streaming now. Pluto TV. Drop in, watch free.